This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Good welcomes, everyone. It's Rack Addicts After Hours time once more, episode 147. Welcome to our music and technology podcast. I'm Ben, Peter's here, and we must find out, what's your week been
like?
Yes, that word. What's your week been like?
Well, it's been up and down for a variety of reasons. And I'll start off with the down first, and that was that I was almost bereft to hear that Tested has ended their podcast.
What?
Tested have retired their podcast.
Oh. Well, that's a blow.
Yeah, I thought so. I regularly listen to it. It's my sort of weekly sort of Friday night.
In the bath.
Yeah, have a long, long hot bath and lay there listening, using my Bose waterproof Bluetooth speaker.
Just in case.
Just in case it falls in the bath. And yeah, just sit there listening to the goodness of the Tested team doing their podcast. So
damn.
They ended it on an episode 668.
Could have been 666. Never mind.
I didn't really catch that because the title of that particular episode was All Good Things.
And
I thought, you know, you don't really think about it because they didn't do it until almost nearly the end. They did a normal podcast and then suddenly went...
People tuned out just because they had to go somewhere and thought, only 5 minutes, or they might have not noticed, and then suddenly their favourite podcast is gone.
Yeah, I kept sort of thinking, why have they not posted anymore? There's none seem to be after this date anyway.
Damn, but 668, that's a good one.
Something like 12 years or something in that region, because they had a bit of a nostalgic recap at the end for about half an hour or so, but yeah, sad really.
Yeah, I mean, what I said to you when we first started this one is, let's just do it and not think about how well it's going for a year, because if you're not going to keep doing it for a year, what's the point?
Yes.
For 12 years, that is staying power.
Well, they had a proper motivation. They had quite a large or even a massive listenership worldwide. They've got the Tested YouTube channel, the Tested website, the membership. I was a member for a time, for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Got one of those posters that Adam Savage puts out occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
It was his plans for his bear costume, I think. I've got it somewhere. Mm. Just turned up in the post. What's this? Oh, okay, nice. Anyway, on a slightly brighter note, I have been investigating printing photography at large scale.
In what context? Are you talking about the negatives that you've been perusing recently?
No, I'm talking about taking digital images that I've taken with my digital camera and printing them for display or for framing or anything like that, but on a large scale.
What's large?
Let me show you.
Hang on. Let me put my tea down. Nice. What are we talking? This is A3-ish?
It's originally printed on what they call oversized A3.
Oversized, yeah, okay.
And then that one has been chopped down to A3. The actual photograph is slightly smaller, so you've got a nice white border all the way around.
Nice. My impression has always been, when you think, let's make some big pictures, always, what happens when you see the pixels?
Well, you take it into Photoshop and you increase the size using Photoshop so it scales it properly.
Right, okay.
And then here's the same picture in a frame.
That's proper stuff, that is. Excellent.
And this is a limited edition. There is only 12 copies.
Awesome.
Now, this one's a particularly sentimental picture for me because, unfortunately, a few months ago, one of my oldest and dearest friends passed away. Mm. And this photograph is...
excellent.
This photograph was taken by me standing inside a cave in Cornwall and looking out the cave. And in the mouth of the cave, silhouetted in ultra-white light is my friend. But notably, he's sort of slightly out of focus.
Yeah.
So you can't...
it's quite dreamy.
Yeah, and it's just very symbolic for me. You would only realise it's him if you actually know the person. It's one of those ones where you go, oh, there's just a bloke standing there.
Yeah. But something about the way he stands or...
yeah, just his poise.
Yeah.
Anyone that knew him well would instantly know who that is.
Excellent.
Yes, so that was interesting. I was able to go to one of my customers who is actually a print factory, and they were kind enough to run those off for me in... We did various experiments in different paper thicknesses and finishes. So I think this is a 200-gram silk, as they call it in the trade. And
it was good stuff.
And it's digitally printed as well. So this was on a very large...
oh, one of those giant ones.
Yeah.
Kind of like the ones that we didn't know that Roland made, or I didn't know that Roland made, that style. Well,
the ones Roland make are effectively inkjet printers. Mm. They're what they call large format, so they're very large, and you can do massive banners and all that type of thing.
Mm.
This is like a standard large colour laser printer,
right,
but a very large one.
The good ones.
Well, I think this one is, I want to say, it's about 5 metres long.
That's quite a printer.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm also thinking of doing larger releases, let's say, sort of 100 off, and putting them on Etsy and see how they go.
Yeah,
not of this picture, but of other photographs I've taken.
Awesome. There are certainly some good ones. I've seen them.
Yes. So basically, that's been my week.
Wonderful stuff. There are two things from my week. I will go with the less synthy one first. I can't remember if I mentioned it on the podcast or not, but no, I don't think I did. There is a company called The Elocution Coach, and they offer training for public speaking, accent coaching, and the like. And they have a introductory kind of service, which I think is, they call it a voice analysis. I've forgotten. Either way, I did one, and I had my results session. So what they ask you to do, there are two parts. One, you read some words, and then some passages, and then the second part, you have to present about yourself in kind of an improvised way. They say, don't prepare anything, don't do a second take. We want to see what you're like off the cuff, and also how you stand and what you do with your hands and stuff. I'm flailing wildly, but you can't see because this is a podcast. Anyway, the results are in. The head of the company, I believe, he's called James. And he's been an actor, a voiceover artist. Now he's a voice coach. But I have my results here. So, one interesting one that you obviously won't hear unless you're really looking out for it and you're trained was part of the diction, pronunciation type section. And he called it crunching. And the example words were duty and train instead of duty and train, which is train is really hard. I can't do that one very well. Duty is fine, but it's those hard consonants, the d and the t, becoming ch and j. Duty, duty. I thought that was interesting.
So are you supposed to make them into does? Or
I suppose, if you're going towards the RP corner of the world, they would be duty and train. But I've got duty and train.
So is that a case you've got to pronounce it in a way that you wouldn't expect so that it's clear, the enunciation is clear to the listener?
I guess, yeah. And obviously you can if you want, or you don't have to. But interesting to know. Of course, I never would have spotted it myself. The other one was something we've spotted before. You've spotted it actually, Pete, in the people that we've been listening to, which James called, and you will immediately recognise it, the Rallentando effect. Can you guess what that is?
I'm not really sure. You better tell me.
Ah, so, mostly a newsreadery type thing, potentially. The starting off a sentence and making it more profound as you reach the end. That thing. So you slow down as you go. So in the passage that I think I read, sort of a paragraph or something, a little story, he noticed that was happening. And not quite in the right way. He said, obviously, it's a technique, you can use it, but I was doing it for every phrase, and then he found, oh, actually there's a rhythm that doesn't quite work here. So it was interesting, but he has listened to the podcast. Hello, James. You're probably not going to be a returning listener, but thank you anyway. He really likes our podcast. He thinks it sounds brilliant and professional, so yeah. And he obviously noticed that the Rallentando effect isn't everywhere in my speaking on the podcast, but yeah. Fascinating. The other comments were from the present about yourself improvised-y type portion of the test. They weren't so positive. He noticed that I went into, what did he call it, penguin mode. In this bit, they ask you to film yourself, you know, head to toe, so they can see your whole body while you're talking. And, you know, it's arms straight by the sides, very stiff and uncomfortable. And also that tension, it added a lifting inflection where every sentence sounds like a question, even though it's a statement. That one.
The sort of Australian inflection type thing.
Yeah, and obviously it just sounds kind of nervous and not definitive and was caused by the tension and nerves of having to improvise something completely off the cuff and without preparation. Fascinating. Of course, this voice analysis will be so they can pitch you their training schemes, which are very expensive. But that in itself was, I think, great value at £40-something.
Yeah, it's most probably really useful to have a professional analyse your technique, no matter what you're doing. If you're trying to improve something, something that you do regularly, it's always handy to get that kind of view on it.
Absolutely. And he reckoned I would be pretty much ready to go in sort of the e-learning corner of the voiceover world, which is pretty cool. So voicing instructional videos, that kind of corner. where he said I'd need some development would be for audiobooks. And of course, we were talking about Stephen Fry and that really inhabiting characters and inviting the listener into the world. That's a whole other kettle of fish and a completely different skill set to our entertainment corner, you know, the podcast, the informative side that we do. Maybe in the future I'll get better at that.
Well, it's not a bad direction to head, though, is it?
But yeah, that was a very cool experience. Glad I had it.
Nice one.
Wonderful. Right, synthy stuff. Ooh, it's very exciting. We had a meeting, the ModCaf and I, at Q121. Yes, I have finally been to the wind tunnel.
How was it?
It was a something. It was an experience. So we went there to meet with SFL, who are a sound and vision-y hire type company, who are going to be providing the PA and engineers to operate said PA for us when we do the thing. And, you know, to get to know one of their engineers, we want the same person to be there for all of it, somebody that really can have a handle on the space and the projects and all that. So we're showing them around. We were also doing some further testing with the Sennheiser Ambio VR mic and the Mix Pre, which will be the equipment used to record the actual album, just seeing how it works, that kind of thing, seeing if the binaural experience is actually, you know, worth doing. I think it is. But what I want to talk about is the space. And unfortunately, I haven't managed to prepare any words because, yeah, words. I can describe it physically. That'll do. So, for listeners who haven't heard about this, the ModCaf is doing a recording project in an abandoned, well, not abandoned, a decommissioned wind tunnel in Farnborough because it's a giant concrete box and it sounds mad and it's going to be really cool. The space. So, from above, the wind tunnel is, imagine the outline of a rectangle. On one long edge, you're going to have a giant fan, probably, I don't know, five times as tall as your average guy, that pushes air around one corner, around the next, and along the other long side. And of course, it goes around the other corners and keeps circulating like that. The big, long, empty stretch is where we're going to be doing the recording. A huge concrete box, which has a sloping floor, and I believe ceiling, and at the end it's got these angled banks of giant vanes which turn the air 90 degrees. In the corners you get some pretty mad echoes, and overall it's a big reverb, and it's quite a special space. There's no lighting in there, so you have to bring torches, and with one light source in a completely dark box, you get some pretty crazy shadows, and the perspective gets very confusing. I'll show you some pictures in a sec, Pete. But I was worried that the space wouldn't affect me in any way. So what we're asking the artists to do is compose a piece that is their response to the space. How does the space make you feel, and how can you interact with the space with your sound-generating things? And if you don't feel much and it's just, it echoes a bit, it's going to be tricky. So I was worried that there'd be no emotional anything going on. But I felt some things when you go in there and you hear the echoing footsteps and what it does to people's voices and the way the light is cast around it. It is really, really special. When I was talking to Jeremy, who's our acoustic engineer mastermind, I likened it to the same feeling of being in Canterbury Cathedral, which, of course, another fantastic acoustic space. I just don't have the words for it. It's really otherworldly, unsettling, and quite magical. And I'm very excited for the other performers to be able to experience it. Hopefully, January-ish. I'll come back if I ever actually get any words. Let me show you some pictures. Anthony has the new iPhone, so it does quite good. Well, not even low light, no light type photos. Here we go. So that's the kind of back end of the giant fan.
Yeah, I mean, that looks artistic, just as a photograph.
Yeah, and then these are the giant vanes. They've got to be over 8 meters tall, maybe 10.
Like massive vertical blinds.
Yeah, but they're each kind of curved to get the air directing round, and you have to squeeze yourself through them to get into the main.
Sort of curved bit. Like a wing.
Yeah, quite aerofoil-ish. And that next to them is where you get some of the really interesting kind of echoes. And this is a great picture, which shows how confusing the perspective and lighting gets.
Yeah, it does get very weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's in the main chamber.
You can't tell how big the room is.
No, and unless you had a really bright light, you've got no idea because your torch just doesn't throw anywhere. Yeah, that's, you just can't see the other end. It's cavernous.
Ominous.
It definitely is. So I have a track on my EP called Nostromo, after, of course, the big spaceship from the first Alien film, and I think it turns up later. Anyway, because, you know, that opening scene with the orchestral plucks and the delay and the spooky ambience in the ship because everybody's in hypersleep or whatever.
Well, when they get woken up, where everything comes alive, everything starts switching on.
Yeah, I tried to capture that kind of feeling in that track on the EP. And the space does that kind of feeling that you get from that opening scene. I think that's all I've got, really, to try and describe how it makes me feel. But it's weird. It's weird. And we played some piano into it, and it is magical. It's really something else.
Wonderful.
Very excited.
So the question I've got is, when are the point maps going to be available?
So we should have some draft ones, and I can send you one once Jeremy's had a go with the recordings we made. It was the sort of excitement device was only an Adam A3X, so probably not even approaching 100 hertz in the low end. And when you get volume in there, it really starts getting interesting. So we'll have something workable that might give you the overall reverb time and maybe some of the delay feel, but it's going to have to be phase one when we get the big PA in there and get the proper measurements made, which hopefully the funding comes through should be, you know, January sometime.
I'll look forward to it.
Yes, and I'll be able to send you some samples of the piano recordings from in there as well.
Excellent.
Verily. Now, from synthy happenings to synthy news, we have, let's save the big one till last, shall we? One is just an interesting guitar pedal board that I found on the internet. This one happens to be on the big A. I don't know where you can get it from, but the company is Guito Effects, G-U-I-T-T-O, but it's pretty cool. You know those aluminium extrusions that you put a little square-shaped thing in a nut and you can kind of bolt them together and it's kind of like a modular framework stuff? Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah, the sort of people build sort of lab instruments out of them, that type of thing.
Exactly, and you can get just corner pieces and you can easily make custom things out of it. But you know the way you can have that nut that kind of slides along and you can just tighten it down and fix stuff in?
Captive nut, and you just crimp it wherever it sits.
Exactly. It's that's kind of what this pedal board is made from.
Okay.
And it comes with all these little nubbins, kind of L-shaped things that you can wedge to either side of a pedal. But it's quite a neat little system if you don't like Velcro.
I suppose so, because you've got to do all sorts of horrible things with my pedals. You have to take all the little feet off so that you can put the Velcro on and all that type of thing.
Exactly. And if you care about your resale value, that's not always a good one.
No, it's not.
But yeah, I saw this on Lines, the forum, and somebody had kind of like your pedal board system, kind of a synth pedal board setup, which is quite neat, and all the cable management. So yes, have a Google. Guito Effects pedal board, aluminium alloy, super light with carry bag. That's the description on Amazon, at least, but it should be available generally online.
Great.
Now, the second big one, Black Corporation. They make some cool stuff, like the Deckard's Dream, the Deckard's Voice, and they've got the ISE-NIN or something, which is the Jupiter 8 clone. I don't know if it's just released or kind of vaguely recently, but they've got a voice version, so kind of like the equivalent of the Deckard's Voice. This is the ISE-NIN. I've no idea how they want you to pronounce it, but it's the voice version of that, and it's got Japanese symbols on it, and it's kind of cool and stuff, I guess.
And expensive.
Of course it is. Do you want to place your bet?
£700.
$699. So yes, because they're the same thing now, aren't they? Dollars and pounds. But yeah, it's there.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well it'll work, considering the Deckard's Voice didn't work out at all well for me.
Yeah, you weren't a fan. So in this one, what have you got? You got two oscillators. Deckard's Voice, was that one oscillator?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it might be more than one. I just can't remember. I didn't have it for more than 48 hours or so.
It really didn't hit the buttons.
Not at all.
Let's have a look. Yeah, no, I think it is just an oscillator, which is a shame. But yes, the Jupiter 8 flavoured one, two oscillators, and of course very Roland-y filter and all that kind of stuff. But of course, the magic happens when you've got eight of them in a box.
Yes. Mm. And I found with the Deckard's Voice, which I said before on the podcast, it didn't have enough modulation inputs. Mm. It was all structured internally. It seemed to have a lot, but then when you try to do stuff, it was not that flexible.
Do you want to guess how many modulation inputs this one has?
Go on.
Well, I guess none. Because it's got CV gate and output.
Yeah, there you go. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the full-sized, full-voice thing would be great, as the Deckard's Dream is, but not as a Eurorack module at all. Doesn't really work for me anyway.
Yeah, tricky. It's just a monosynth that happens to fit in a Eurorack enclosure. That is all. Now, Pete, do you want to take us away with the big one, the big exciting one of this week or last week or whenever it appeared?
Well, that was on, what was that show called?
Oh, Synthplex.
Synthplex, 22. Is that a new one? It's in the US or is it in Canada?
I think the problem with it is it comes after the bigger ones like Superbooth and Synthfest, and then it's just like another one that all the manufacturers go, oh yeah, we released this a while ago, but we're not going to miss out on the US, I suppose. So yeah, there's not a lot seems to turn up at that one.
Yes, well, the one thing that sort of caught my eye, because I thought it was semi-interesting, was the release of the Synclavier.
Indeed. I don't know how to say its name, because it's either the Regen, or when I first read it, I thought, the Regen. Oh, wait, no, that makes sense. So, I don't know. Is it the Regen?
That's how I call it, the Regen.
I'll just be annoying and call it the Regen.
The Regen.
Just to annoy everyone.
So, previous to this, the guy that owns the rights, because he purchased them, because he's not the original Synclavier, because they only lasted from, I want to say, 1980 to 1993.
Not a long time.
No, although they had been developing the technology since the early 70s, from what read earlier.
Really?
And prior to the release of this new device, this desktop Synclavier, he did have an iOS version that he released on the iPad in 2019. Or when I say iPad, I mean any device, iPhone, etc. iOS. I mean, it looks quite sort of sexy, but I'm not sure if it's how relevant it is in this day and age with all the other things, because obviously a Synclavier was a beast of its time.
Absolutely, and pioneering, and just did things that nothing else could do.
Literally, the only other thing around was the Fairlight.
Yeah, that was it. And this one, there's plugins that can do what it does, but the only other synthesizer that it's kind of getting compared to is the Waldorf Iridium Quantum? I can never remember which ones those are. The one that has sampley stuff in it.
I think you're talking about the Iridium, possibly.
I think it's the one that was a module first.
Yeah, the Iridium.
Yeah, that's the chap. That seems to get thrown around a lot.
But saying that, going back, the original Synclavier was, or could be, apparently, anything between $25,000 to $200,000.
Yeah, it's mad.
But I remember seeing it on TV in the early 80s and people talking about it, and it was just unimaginable owning or even using something like that or getting access to something like that. It was for the rock gods or the music gods anyway.
And universities and all the organisations with unreasonable cash to fling around.
Yes. Very popular with a myriad of major artists at the time. I have a small list of the people that used it. Michael Jackson, Frank Zappa, used on many films, including Apocalypse Now, The Princess Bride.
Bride? Yeah, didn't expect that one to be
War
there.
Games, etc. Quite a random selection there.
So yeah, the Regen, on their website, it's 2,254 plus VAT.
How much?
2,254 Great British Pounds and VAT. Let me do the thing in my brain.
Well, that's another 500, so it's 3,000-ish.
27 whatevers and import duty.
Yeah, well, that's going to rack it up a bit, isn't it?
Just a bit. Just a bit. The big thing with this one, apart from it having three sharp corners and one rounded one, which is just a bit confusing, is it has no knobs.
No, I noticed that. It was all buttons, wasn't it? With multifunction, depending on how many times you tap them.
But the only way to actually edit a value is to press its button, and then you've got this slidery thing down on the bottom left, which is kind of a touchscreen style, like some kind of capacitive situation. But that's it. It's the only way. I mean, of course, you can MIDI CC, but...
I wasn't that blown away by the demos either.
No, it didn't grab me. Just, yeah.
I mean, the level of polyphony's up there. I mean, it was...
Big numbers.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the... Let's see if I can find the actual numbers, but the kind of, you know, oscillator sound layer preset type architecture was quite mad. Let me see if I can find that. Okay, so in each sound has 12 partials, which you could, in conventional synthesis speak, that could be a timbre of a multi-timbral synth, 12 of them. And in each of those, you have three synthesis modes. You've got additive and subtractive synthesis and a sample, like a multi-sample player. And of course, you can then further process these with effects and normal synthesizer stuff like amplifiers and filters and what have you. And then the polyphony for all of that, let me have a look. I've no idea. Lots of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't know how I feel about it at all. I don't, in fact, I'm pretty ambivalent to it, to be honest.
I don't think I'd want to use it. I think the only other synth that I have actually played with and then gone, I hate using this thing, was...
The white thing.
The white one. Yeah, what's that? Ah, the Kyra.
Yeah.
It took me 20 minutes to find how to turn the noise level up.
Yes. They don't exactly fly off the shelves in the shop.
Again, technical feat. Absolutely. They're incredible. Huge multi-part, multi-polyphonic, you know, all these things, but ouch. Speaking of polyphonic and multi-things, there is MPE support on the regen, of course. So I'm sure it'll be expressive and wonderful, but for a select few.
I'm sure it's a very nice thing, but going back to the original Fairlight, it was sensational 40 years ago. Mm. Nowadays, there's just so many things that can sound similar-ish.
Yeah, it's so difficult to make sounds that nobody's heard before now. We've just had so many. I think the sound design on Dune. There you go. There's a crunch. Dune. Dune. Oh, man, it sounds so posh. Yes, the sound design on Dune. Sort of did a bit of that, didn't it? It did sound otherworldly and fresh.
Yes. But we'll have to see how many they sell. Indeed. See if they survive.
Time will tell.
It will.
That brings us to the end of the synthy news for this week. Of course, that means next is the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And Pete's going first. Fire away. What have you brought?
Right, this week, not a YouTube. Although it can be viewed on YouTube if you want to. Right, I've mentioned on the podcast before my favourite documentary producer, and his name is Adam Curtis.
Yeah, wouldn't have got it.
He works for the BBC and has access to all their archives, and he's famous for some of his polemic type of documentaries, including Bitter Lake and Hypernormalization. I say polemic. His style is to just utilize lots of documentary and news clip outtakes, the stuff that he's got access to in the BBC archives that go back many years. And then he puts them together, in a lot of cases, using soundtracks by artists, including Massive Attack and Burial and several others. You know, that sort of strange, beguiling, ambient type stuff that just makes it more interesting.
Yeah,
and then
he'll
let the video or the film talk for itself for 5 minutes and not say anything, just music and show you things, and then he'll make a statement. This one's a bit different, and it's in 7 parts. It's on the BBC iPlayer, and if our international listeners can't get access to the iPlayer for whatever reason, mainly because they're not in the UK, etc., etc., although I suppose if you can use a VPN and pretend you're in the UK, there'll be a way to get in. But the documentaries are now being posted on YouTube as well by a variety of people. And this particular series of films is called Trauma Zone, Russia, 1985 to 1999. And his explanation is that it shows with all this archival footage that he's got access to, apparently 35,000 hours worth.
Ooh, I wouldn't have liked to trawl through that.
That it's the transition from the collapse of communism and then the collapse of democracy as it happens between those 2 years, between those 2 dates. It's not for everyone, and he doesn't do any voiceover on this one. He just runs the VT and then puts text up where he wants to make a point.
Mm.
But generally, there's no angle. A lot of the times, he just points out this happened and then this happened and this happened and allows the viewer to make their own conclusions as you proceed through. But I'd highly recommend it, and that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the 7-part documentary from the producer Adam Curtis entitled Russia 1985 to 1999 Trauma Zone.
Wonderful stuff. This week it's a musical one, and if you don't like 70s prog rock, tough, because this is about as 70s prog rock as it is possible to be, apart from the fact that it's not from the 70s, unfortunately. So, it starts by having album art by Roger Dean, of Yes and many other album art fame, and it's a good one. It also has a pretty terrible band name, I'm very sorry, but there's a lot of, the United Progressive Fraternity. That's a terrible prog rock band name. This one is Downs Braid Association, because I think the main guy is somebody Downs Braid surname. It's not great. I'm really sorry. And the album title, Halcyon Hymns. That's a bit pretentious, isn't it? And then the track opens with... I'm really not selling it, am I? Anyway, the track opens with fingerstyle 12-string guitar and is quickly joined by classic drums and some synthy wobbly bits. But it's a good tune. So this one is called Holding the Heavens. And yeah, if you like classic 70s prog, it's going to do it for you. Really nice vocal performance. It's quite similar across the album in some of the phrases he chooses. But I'm all about it. It goes in unexpected places, as prog rock often does. But it's a nice listen. So that will be Holding the Heavens from the album Halcyon Hymns by Downes Braid Association. I better spell Downes Braid. It's DOWNESBRAIDE. I hope you enjoy, if that's your thing. And of course, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you're here for the next episode. And for now, farewell.